Florida State versus Stanford in an ACC After Dark matchup. The Noles need a win in the worst kind of way, and they're going to have to travel 2,500 miles to the West Coast to try and pick up their first Atlantic Coast Conference win of the season. Welcome to college football in 2025, where nothing makes sense anymore, it feels like. But we got a lot to talk about today. This is an important game for Florida State. This could be a win or get fired type of game for Mike Norvell. We're going to talk about all that today. Appreciate you guys rocking with us. I'm Jesse from Plant the Spear, and thank you for joining us for this episode. Look, I hope you guys are doing good out there, not letting this football team ruin too much of your fall season. I'm excited for the weather in the 50s here in the Carolinas, headed to the mountains tomorrow on Friday. Looking forward to that. Got an oyster roast on Saturday. Look, I'm trying to just do anything I can to distract myself from being mad at this football team on the weekends, but you know, we're still diehard, so we're still going to watch it. We're still going to sit there and be mad at our TV for a few hours. But hopefully, finally, Florida State can get a win, snap this three-game losing streak, and get back on track. Now, I understand there's some of you guys that are probably hoping that Florida State loses this game on Saturday, so we do maybe see a coaching change. We're going to talk about all that. I'm not going to root against this team. I still want Florida State to win. I mean, my goodness, I need something positive to talk about this season. It's tough, man. Last year was really hard, and this year is headed down that same path. It's been a crazy couple of weeks on social media, really. I mean, I came out in the third quarter of the Miami game, and I thought it was time for change then, and that was met with mixed emotions, right? Some people supported that. Some people trashed me for that. Then when we lost to Pitt, I think a lot of people jumped on that train with me. But still, man, I mean, I've been called every name under the sun the last week, fake fan, bandwagoner fan, make somebody sick, a hurricane, a gator, you name it, I've been called it the last week. I got thick skin. I'm not coming on here looking for sympathy in any means. I know this is college football. People are crazy. We operate in the court of public opinion. But then I try and post something positive. I'm like, all right, you guys are tired of me being negative. Hey, let's post a beat Stanford graphic on social media and let's be positive. I get told to delete the page, quit the podcast because no one cares anymore. What do you want me to do, guys? I'm trying my best. I can only do so much. And I mean, again, it doesn't really get to me too much, but when you field hundreds, if not thousands of comments a week across all of our platforms, it does wear on you, man. It does get tiring after times. But Plant the Spear is not going anywhere, so I hate it for you guys. I mean, if I'm a fake fan, I'd like to meet a real one, right? I don't do this to my house. I don't, you know, go to drive 7 hours one way to games and all that stuff, booster season ticket holder, battles in, you name it. If I'm fake, I'd like to meet a real one, but we do this for you guys, right? We have some great listeners. We have some great friends that we've made throughout the years doing this. And so we're not going anywhere. We're not going to hide from this team being bad. Whether it's 12-0 or 0-12, we're going to show up every week and we're going to talk about this team. So, let's just jump into some things right here. And, you know, I do want to start with what this game means for Florida State. And then we'll talk about the game itself. Because I know most of you guys probably just gloss over, oh, it's Stanford, right? You should win this game. And that is what it is. Like, if you want a five-second preview, Florida State, you're a better team. Even as bad as you are, they're worse. You should win this game. But let's talk about what it means in a sense for Florida State. Because, you know, last week I had said where I thought the Pitt game was a tipping point or a turning point. Well, it tipped, right, for sure. But they didn't fire him. So I think now you have to go back to, okay, well, then what is going to be the tipping point if that were to come this season? And so I felt like that was the Pitt game. But, man, this Stanford game really does. And I posted this on social media this week where I feel like this Stanford game is a line in the sand game, right? You drop four straight losses and you're a 17.5-point favorite over a 2-4 Stanford team. I think you have to fire him right then. I don't think you can come back from that. I think if you go out there and you lose to this Stanford team, who is not good, we'll talk about their record and stuff in a minute, but they have two wins. One of them is a 1-point win over San Jose State. The other is over a 1-5 Boston College team. They're just not good. And so if you go out there and lose this game to be your fourth straight loss, they have a coach, Frank Reich, who is basically a temporary favor to Andrew Luck as the coach, doesn't even want the job. I think this would be it. I think if you lose this one, this is this would be the loss that would force the administration's hand, right? And again, we'll talk about this, but you guys already know my position on this. I've talked about this ad nauseum in the last three or four episodes, but it's not about what I want, right? It's about what the administration is actually going to do. They're the ones that have to come up with the $50, $60 million. That's not me. So I can say I wanted them gone in the third quarter of the Miami game. I can say I wanted them gone after the Pitt game, but it's more about what they're going to do. So that's how we're going to talk about it today. It's not going to be about what we want. So just keep that in mind as we go forward. But if you lose this game and then you go into a bye week before Wake Forest, there's no better time to do it than right now. And so if you lose this game, I just don't think there's any coming back from that. I think that's the most embarrassing loss you will have had, maybe even in the last 2 years, because this is just a really bad Stanford team. Like 2024 Florida State would probably beat this Stanford team. So if you go out there and lose, I think you have to leave him on the tarmac. Like, let's see a Lane Kiffin 2.0 type of firing. He's going to get $50 million. He can find his way back to Tallahassee. Or maybe you let him on the plane, but you make him pay for the gas or something like that. I don't know. But I also will say this. If they lose this game and they don't fire him, I don't think it's going to happen this season. I think you can pretty much buckle up for 2026 because I think he's going to be back. And I know there have been some reports out there this week about, you know, the administration and sources say that they don't want to fire Mike Norvell. I mean, no kidding, guys. Like, breaking news, Florida State doesn't want to pay their coach $54 million to not coach football games. Like, I don't think that's any kind of groundbreaking news. But I do think definitely you need to win this ball, or you need to win this game. And, you know, realistically, I think you kind of need to thump them, because if you come back with a win, say a 3-point win as a 17.5-point favorite over this Stanford team, yeah, you won on paper, but it's still going to feel like a loss. You know, even if you'd have come back against Pitt last week, you'd have been disappointed in that win. And so, I mean, you'll never turn your nose up at a win. Lord knows last year we only had two of them. We would have killed for a win last year, but I think you need to win this game, and I think you need to win it convincingly if I'm Mike Norvell in Florida State. But I do want to say this, man. I think, again, if they don't fire him, I don't think they're going to, outside of him losing out. Like, unless he just misses a bowl game, I don't know that he's going to get fired this year. And so I want to say this. I think with that, I think there are two ways that this scenario should go or should play out, whichever way you want to look at it. And this is, again, this is not from what I want, what we, the fans, want. Because honestly, I think he's already lost most of the fan base, right? I think there is a very small margin of fan base, you know, the ones who still like to flame me on social media for saying we want him fired. Because I think some people are, unfortunately, they're more attached to the coach than they are the program. And I'm the opposite way. That's how me and Michael both feel here at Plant the Spear. We are attached to the program, not the coach. No one coach is bigger than this program. And if you held Bobby to that standard, the one that he set, Willie to that standard, Mike should be no different. And so we feel that way. But it's, again, it's about the administration and what they'll actually do. So I think there are two ways this should play out in the end. I think one, obviously if he loses, he needs to be fired, right? But let's just say they win close, things aren't looking good, but he still gets the win. I mean, let's be real. They're still on track to finish this season 8-4. They could go 9-3. I don't believe that's going to happen. I don't believe anyone else believes that's going to happen. But they could still lose a game and go 8-4, which is what we said we needed to see this year. Now, again, how much are you impressed with beating a 2-4 Stanford team, a Wake Forest team, who, by the way, is actually playing pretty darn good? They're 4-2 and should have beat Georgia Tech, the worst Clemson team in 15 years. You got to do it on the road. An NC State team who's, they're kind of middling ACC as usual. Then a bad Florida team, a 2-win Florida team. And then a Virginia Tech team who's in an interim coach and got blown out by Old Dominion. Like, how much are those wins going to move the needle? So to me, I don't know that even winning out, like, I guess winning out, if it looks good and you sign a good class and all that stuff, then I think that's okay, right? I think you can buy yourself another year by winning out and it looking good. You can't go have a 3-point win at Stanford. Like, you got to thump them. You got to thump Virginia Tech. You got to go win these games on the road. And if you do that and you hold together this recruiting class, which I believe is 13th in the country right now and has not lost a commitment yet. So if you can do those things, I think he is going to get another year. I think he should get another year if he does that. I certainly don't think the administration is going to fire him, right? I don't think that they're going to fire him at 8-4, and I don't think they're going to fire him at 7-5, because I don't think one win is worth $50 million to them. Again, you guys already know my feelings, so that's not what we're the perspective that we're coming from. But back to the two situations I think this should play out in. If you feel like at any point in this season that he needs to be fired, I think you need to do it right now. You do not wait. You do not delay this. Maybe that's not right now if he beats Stanford, but maybe they look terrible against Wake. Maybe they get blown out by Clemson or a bad Clemson team. I think at that point, you got to do it. Because if you drag your feet on this, you're only going to put yourself further behind in the coaching search, which is only going to put the new coach further behind in recruiting this roster, filling his assistant roles. You know, there's what, like 10 or 15 job openings already. And I say that sarcastically, there's about 5 or 6, but you already have like 5 or 6 job openings that are going to be competing for not only head coaches, but assistant coaches and coordinators and all these things, you know. And then once those openings get filled, that will create other openings. And we haven't even seen all the end of the firings yet. So the longer you wait, the later you're going to be in this process. And so I think you need to rip the Band-Aid off if you feel like it needs to happen from the administration standpoint at any point this season. You just rip the Band-Aid off and you get started on your search so you can give that coach time to fill his positions, to recruit this roster, to try and put together a class for signing day, you know, to start targeting guys in the portal and see who he can retain and who he can't from this roster. And that's why I think you can't wait. And realistically, I believe it's on December 1st, Mike Norvell's buyout drops by a couple million dollars. If you wait till December 1st, you might as well wait till next season, because you are going to give the next coach literally no time to get this thing started. You are not going to set him up for success. That would be a complete botched process if you were to wait until, you know, December 2nd to do this, because I think the signing day is like that week. That would be crazy. So again, you cannot wait till the end of the season. I mean, even if you're like, man, I thought this was going to work out, we won a couple games, you just don't feel that way before the Florida game, you need to be off of this, because you got to start filling that position. On the flip side of that, if they're just not going to fire him, like maybe they're just like, hey, like Cat or like Kevin Hart says, my bank account just ain't set up that way, right? Me and Michael were joking about this on the last episode. Like, we want a Lamborghini, but sometimes you just got to rock the Camry for a little bit, because it's just the way your finances are. And I know people were going to talk about the James Franklin thing and how, you know, they paid out a $49 million buyout. And they're serious about football, and you're not if you don't fire Mike Norvell because he was a better coach, and they still fired him with a big buyout. I get all that. But let me just caution you with one thing. First off, Penn State has Big Ten money. We already know that. Secondly, I did some research, and I found some things on Google from their respective websites, from the university websites, and Penn State has one of the largest living alumni bases in the country that is over double the size of Florida State's. Florida State is a relatively young university. So again, you're talking about the numbers that I saw were around 400 and change for Florida State, 400,000, and around 800,000 for Penn State. You're talking about double the potential donors out there. So, I mean, it is what it is, guys. This is what we're up against. Doesn't mean Florida State's not serious about football at all. They just might not have the money, or they might not want to pay that much right now. It's just, you know, going through all the things they're doing with the facility upgrades and everything like that, and what it costs to bring in the new coaches and fire the old staff and all that stuff. They might just not have the money, because it's going to cost a lot. You know, you also, if you hire a new coach, you're going to have to go pay their buyout if there is one. And then you're going to have to pay the assistants buyouts to get them to come here. And I mean, you guys already know all this stuff, but it's going to cost a ton of money. No, that doesn't have to be paid out right away. Mike Norvell's buyout, you know, the new coach's salary, all that stuff doesn't have to be paid up front. But at the same time, now some of those do, like, Michael was telling me that Mark Stoops, if he gets bought out, his is due within 60 days. So if you were to buy out another coach, you may have to pay that up front. So there is an astronomical cost with this regardless, no matter which way you go. But if you aren't going to fire him, I think it's a tough situation, because I think most people know the only reason he's going to still be here in 2026 is because you can't afford to fire him. And so I think that's going to really hurt with donations. That's going to help that teams are going to be negatively recruiting you. And it's just going to put you in a tough spot to rebound next year. It's only going to make it harder with a tougher schedule. But I think if the administration is not going to fire him, I think at some point they need to come out like Florida did last year and say, look, this is our guy. We think he's going to fix it. If he needs to make some changes in the offseason, we're going to let him do that. And you just need to calm the noise, quiet the noise a little bit, right? Because, and I'm not talking about just from the fan base, because the fan base is already in mutiny, essentially. And if you lose to Stanford, again, I think it's, you know, the pitchforks will be out in Tallahassee. But I think you're also, you know, you're getting negatively recruited on this. So I think you should probably come out and kind of squash the noise a little bit. That doesn't mean you can't fire him. I mean, they gave, you know, Billy Napier the nod last year, the vote of confidence. And it was so funny. It was the funniest thing in the world, because while they were talking about that quote, they were getting beat 49-0 against Texas. It was the most funny thing you've ever seen. And now they're talking about he might be fired as soon as this weekend. So just because you come out and say that doesn't mean you can't fire him next year. But I do think somebody from, you know, the AD needs to come out and say, hey, look, this is our guy. We're gonna roll with him for next year and see how things go. So I think that's the two situations this needs to play out. You either need to rip the Band-Aid, or you need to put another Band-Aid over it and just be like, look, man, this is where we're at. And there's no point in talking about it, because it's not going to happen this year. With that being said, I think from the university standpoint, if you look at it from their point of view, that schedule next year is no joke. I mean, do you really, really want to put that new schedule or that next year's schedule on the next coach? I mean, you got at Alabama, you got Notre Dame, you got at Miami, you got at Louisville, you got a lot of tough teams. You only got one cupcake team on the schedule next year. So that's going to be a hard schedule to win 8, 9, 10 games against anyway. So maybe you don't let him wear that. I think that's one positive. You would obviously save some money by having another year and another year off the assistance buyout. So there's another positive there. I also think at that point you have let Mike Norvell's changes flesh out for another season. And so now you can at least say, hey, look, man, we let him make changes. We gave him two seasons. It just isn't working. But at least you gave him a fair chance, right? I think that maybe that even looks better when you're trying to fill the, you know, a coaching search or whatever, where you're like, look, we didn't just fire him immediately. Because, you know, it was already when you fired Willie Taggart after 21 games. I'm sure a lot of coaches were like, I don't know if I want to be put in that same position. And so, you know, again, like I said, guys, I personally think he should have already been gone. But I'm just trying to look at this from a more pragmatic situation, a more realistic situation of what might actually happen. Now, I think if you don't fire him and you do bring him back for next year, I think that does come with the understanding that the bar still gets raised. 7-5, 8-4 was good enough to save you for this year. It's not good enough next year. I don't care about the schedule. You still have to go win at least probably 9 games, because you have some tough out-of-conference games. You know, Notre Dame doesn't count, Alabama doesn't count, Florida doesn't count. You still need to win at least 9 games. You still need to be in contention for the ACC, and you still need to be in contention for the playoffs. So that's just kind of where I'm at on whether it happens or whether it don't. But again, I still think if you lose to Stanford on Saturday night, I think someone should lose their job on Sunday. And I hate calling for people's jobs. It's not anything about that, but they're all going to be paid millions of dollars to not coach, so they'll be fine. Now, the other side of that, right, is it Mike Norvell that gets fired if you lose on Saturday night? Because, I mean, what if you go out there and you lose this game, you know, like the Pitt score, 34-31, you give up 30 points to a bad Stanford offense. I mean, let's be honest, guys, it's the defense that's been the problem. And so maybe you don't fire Mike Norvell. Maybe you let Tony White be the scapegoat, you know, and that's what it would feel like if you fired Tony White, is it would feel like a scapegoat firing to save Mike Norvell's head for another year. But do you fire Tony White? I mean, let's be honest. It's cheaper than firing Mike Norvell. It's probably going to cost you $5 million, not $50 million. We did say this was Mike Norvell's one chance to overhaul the staff, and he was not going to get this opportunity again. But if the offense is working and the defense is not, it does at least seem like a logical option. Now, I don't love the offense. I think it's somewhat gimmicky to a degree. Tommy's been banged up, so that's going to limit your offense. And if him being not mobile is going to hinder this offense to that degree, maybe that's a concern in itself of the overall view of the picture on what you can do at the quarterback position. But at the end of the day, this offense is still putting up enough points to win games, and the defense has not. So it's just so puzzling to me, man, because Tony White typically has good defenses. Now, I did mention in the preseason where, and I will say this, not only has he had good defenses, but they typically get better when he takes over. Nebraska took a big jump. Syracuse did not take a big jump in year one because it was the COVID year. But after that, they took a big jump in 2021. But I did mention in the preseason that I was a little bit worried about how he was going to do against the better offenses, because I think he does average something like 40 points a game allowed against top 25 scoring offenses. And the Big Ten typically does not have, you know, for everything the ACC is not, they typically have better offenses than the Big Ten. So, you know, I know with some of the expansion and bringing in Oregon and things like that, maybe that won't be the case very long. But, you know, there's just not a whole lot of offense going on in the Big Ten with a lot of those schools anyway, with most of those schools. And so this was a little bit of a concern. But, you know, we'd already seen him at Syracuse do good. And so that's what doesn't make any sense to me. You know, you could ask, is it a talent issue? Well, BMAC, you know, former FSU player, two-time Super Bowl champion, he doesn't seem to think so. And, you know, some of the things that we have said on the show, if you have not watched the 15-minute, like, basically rant that he has on CBS, I encourage you to watch it, because there are some people that don't like the things that we say because we're a fan site. Well, go argue with a two-time Super Bowl champion former player and NFL draft pick, right? He's saying a lot of the same things. Now, I will agree with what Bud had to say on that same clip, to where I think there, because he was mostly focused on the secondary, BMAC was. I do think at some positions, you do have a talent problem. I think at the edge positions, you have a talent problem. I think at linebacker, you have a talent problem. That also doesn't mean they can't be coached poorly too, right? You're not squeezing the most juice from that talent. And I think that is a twofold problem. You know, I think you could also question where, again, he didn't have more talent at Syracuse than he did at Florida State. They were, I think, almost dead last in talent in ACC rankings. Every year he was there, you are at least top 3 to 5 in the ACC. So I don't, in some positions it is talent, right? But in some positions, the scheme's just not working. The coaching, they just look poorly coached. They look unprepared. So, I just think, why, we were talking about this with Michael yesterday. How come you could only get two players to come over from Nebraska with you? And neither one of them were starters. And we know both of them had a deeper connection than just on the football field. That may have been a red flag in itself. And really, neither one of them are playing good right now either. So, man, Michael did mention yesterday that firing Fuller did not sound like it was necessarily Mike Norvell's decision. It sounded like maybe the administration came and said, look, either you make changes or we'll make changes. And so I don't know, man, but he still made the hire. He still chose to hire him. I don't know that it's the 3-3-5. I don't necessarily love the scheme. I thought it would be better than it was. We've seen it work at NC State. We've seen it work at Syracuse. I don't know. Something's just not clicking with it. Maybe it is talent. Maybe it is coaching. Maybe it's a combination of both. But I do think it's something that you at least have to consider at the end of this year if you feel like this offense is good enough. Now, again, you got to replace that entire offensive line. You may or may not have to replace Tommy at the end of the year. So that's something to look at as well, if you just maybe like, okay, well, maybe we should just replace everything. But if you were to replace Tony White, maybe that's the answer because the offense was doing enough. I also, and I hate to use them as an example, but I think it's a good example, right? If you look at what Mario did down at Miami, he has had 3 DCs in 4 years. He basically fired them every single season until he found one that was going to work. And granted, they don't have a talent issue down there like maybe we do at some positions here, right? But you've got a million blue chip DBs. Why are we so bad in the secondary? That I'll never understand. That has to be coaching, because you can't tell me we've signed like 30 blue chip DBs. We have 18 on the roster, and I guarantee you probably at least 10 or 12 of them are blue chip players. Where's Charles Lester, former 5-star? You know, where's Kai Bates, the ones we heard all about? I think maybe it might be time to even look at giving those guys some burn to see if they can get it right. But getting back to the Miami example, no, we don't have Reuben Bain. No, we don't have Akeem Mezidor types on our defensive line. And that does make a big difference. But against Power 4 teams only, their first-year DC in year one, Corey Heatherman, has taken them in scoring defense from 72nd to 7th. Their defense sucked last year, and it is now a top 10 defense in 1 year. Now, granted, Florida State has faced a little bit tougher slate of offenses, but Tony White has taken us from 60th to 81st. So we have gotten worse. I mean, it seems like it's not a bad option. If you feel like the offense is working, maybe Mike Norvell even hires someone to tell him what to do on fourth down, because I'm about sick of these decisions. But this defense just looks undisciplined. They look unprepared. They lack fundamentals. It's like they don't know they can use their arms when they tackle. It's just the most mind-boggling thing that you've seen to watch this defense and how far they've regressed and how they just don't look like they even know what they're doing. It looks like little league football out there, just running around, or you know, recess football, running around on the playground. And so, can they bow up this week? Can they get better? Can they get this win against Stanford before that bye week when they have a chance to clean things up? You know, there seems to be a little bit of tension there, right, between Tony White and Mike Norvell. If you saw that conversation they had coming off the field the other day after the pit loss, Mike looked pissed. And it looked like he said something about Tony's mama. And I'm just saying that tongue-in-cheek, but it did not look friendly. But at the end of the day, man, the offense has not been perfect, right? You've had seven turnovers in the last three games. That's not helping you win games. So it's not solely on the defense. And just for reference, when you look at 2024, so Florida State this season has lost 10 turnovers in six games. That puts them on pace for 20 this season, right? In 12 games, in a 12-game regular season, because you didn't make a bowl last year. The 2024 team had 22 turnovers lost in 12 games. So you are right on pace for 2024. In 2023, you only turned the ball over 9 times in 13 games. In 2022, it was 14 in 13 games. So turnovers are killing you, and you can directly tie that to success, right? I don't put all the turnovers aren't really on the coaches, right? Those are the players fumbling the ball. Those are the quarterbacks throwing interceptions. That's not on coaching. But you got to figure out how to get it out of here. You know, maybe that's a replacement in running backs coach. Maybe that's a replacement in the quarterback coach. Lord knows we haven't developed a high school quarterback ever, so I really don't understand what we're still doing there. But I just think that the defense is still the problem, because when you look at it, adjusted for power four opponents only, because people love to tout what we did in those two games that obviously don't matter now, right? We're not scoring 70 points a game, and we're not holding teams to 10 points a game either. Scoring offense, Florida State against power four opponents right now is averaging 30.5 points per game, which is 20th in the country. You have faced the 7th, 20th, 50th, and 70th ranked scoring defenses. That's enough to win games, guys. Now, I understand the Miami game was a little bit fluky, right? You only had 3 points at the end of the third quarter. I don't count that as you really scoring 22 points, right? I mean, Miami kind of went to that bend don't break style stuff, but you still scored 38 points at Virginia, what, 35 in regulation or whatever it was. You still scored 31 points against Pitt. That should be enough to win a game at home against a true freshman quarterback making his first start on the road. The problem is, and you only had one turnover in that game, the problem is your scoring defense right now against power four opponents is allowing 31.3 points per game, which is 81st in the country. That's just not good enough. That's not going to cut it. And you face a similar skill, similar level of competition too. The scoring offenses that you faced are 5th, 14th, 41st, and 42nd. So it's not like one side has faced a bunch of bad, you know, offenses or defense, and the other side has faced a bunch of tough. It's been almost the same, and the defense just is not getting the job done. So, you know, man, at the end of the day, you have 6 games left to prove yourself if you're Mike Norvell and his coaching staff and this team. You haven't lost any commits, like I said. You still have a decent recruiting class there sitting at 13th. You got some nice young players on this roster. And we haven't seen the quit in this team that you've seen in 2024. Now, if you lose to Stanford, that might be a different conversation. But, man, at the end of the day, you got to get some wins. And until they fire him or he gives us a reason to talk about this again, like we'll probably do a kind of mid-season episode next week for the bye week, so we probably will talk about this again. At some point, guys, we're just going to move on and start talking about the games and stuff, right? Until we have to start doing hot boards or fire watch or things like that, it's saying the same thing over and over at some point. You know, again, you already know my feelings. I said it in the third quarter of the Miami game, but I don't have $60 million, so that doesn't matter. But again, I still think this is kind of a win or get fired type of game for Stanford. And if you win this game, I think you do live to fight another day. But I will say this, and if you're watching on YouTube, I want you to answer this in the comments. I put Michael on the spot with this question yesterday, and I wish I'd have been able to have his answer in here. But I am interested to see where the confidence among our fan base is right now, because I think the way you answer this question, whether you're pro Mike Norvell or you're ready to jump off the Mike Norvell train, whether you're done climbing or not, right? And whoever the next coach is, if we have a new coach, man, I don't want no more slogans. I don't want to do something. I don't want to climb. I don't want no lethal simplicity. I just want belt, to butt. That is all the slogan that I want, right? Kirby's jumping up on tables and spanking folks and stuff. That's what I want as a head coach. I don't want no silly slogans. Anyway, I digress. The way you answer this question says a lot about what you probably think needs to happen. Right now, if you had to bet your mortgage, if you had to bet your last dollar on Florida State to win out or to lose out, what would you choose? Answer in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. Think about it to yourself. Michael, I put him on the spot, and he said the same thing I said. If I had to put money on it, I would bet on them to lose out more than I would bet on them to win out. Now, I don't think they're going to lose out or win out either way. I think it's going to be, you know, probably, I think you'll probably beat Stanford. I think you'll probably beat Virginia Tech. I think you're going to lose a couple more games too. But man, that kind of tells you where you stand, that if you weren't willing to bet on one versus the other, kind of tells you, you know, where that's at. But man, it's just, I just think right now you need some wins if you're Mike Norvell. You need some wins if you're this program. You need some wins if you're the administration, because if you don't want to make that decision, the best thing you can do is start winning games. Because let's be real, guys, the last thought on this is the absolute best scenario is for Mike Norvell to pull this thing out of a nosedive and to be able to win games the rest of the season and then rebound and have a good season next year, so you don't have to pay 50-something million dollars and restart with your roster and all that stuff again. That is the best case scenario. So I'm going to root for this team to win, whether I want Mike here or not, because I don't really care whose name is next to head coach. As long as you're winning games, it doesn't matter to me. Just go win. And so, you know what, man? You know who always wins? And that's Alumni Hall FSU. That is the sponsor of today's episode. Look, guys, I'm not ashamed to still wear Noel gear, and you shouldn't be either. You should always be proud of this team. And they got you covered, man. They got all the stuff you want. Look, hey, basketball season's coming up. You got Coach Laux getting started on the exhibition this week against Alabama. I'm excited for that, to see what they're going to do. A lot of excitement around that program. You got fall ball kicking up for baseball. They got some baseball gear over there at Alumni Hall. So they'll get you covered, even if maybe you ain't trying to talk about football right now. If you've washed the season from your brain and moved on already, we still got other sports, so go check those guys out. They got elite FSU gear, 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or shop online at alumnihall.com. And make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR online or in store. That's code SPEAR for 10% off your entire order. So we appreciate you guys supporting those who support us, and thank them for supporting this show. So let's talk about this Stanford game, right? We're gonna get through this preview. I just wanted to talk, set the kind of the stage for what this game means, because I think that's probably more prominent on people's minds than this actual game yourself, because you're probably thinking, look, the Stanford team, it doesn't matter what you say, they're not very good. You should just win this game outright. And that is the case, right? Florida State comes in 3-3. Stanford comes in at 2-4. As bad as you've been, they're worse. Now, this is, as we mentioned, ACC After Dark, 10:30 p.m. kick. You better get you a nap in. You better get you a cup of coffee going late, because, man, this one's gonna end like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. It's going to be ridiculous. We'll see how things go with a post-game show. You know, if they leave Mike in California, you best believe we'll be going live. If not, it might be Sunday. Well, it'll be Sunday anyway, I guess. But why is this game at 10:30 at night? Why? This makes absolutely no sense. This should be an afternoon kick. The ACC should have met partway and said, hey, look, we'll give you a 3:30, 4:30 kick. So it's like 7:30, 6:30 Eastern time for both fan bases can meet in the middle. And why do I say that? Because I'm not saying Stanford doesn't deserve a night game. They play Cal next month at home. Two West Coast teams. You could not have given them the 7:30 kick to let them have a night time. It's the ACC, man. What do you expect? You got two Friday night games, a 10:30 p.m. kick, and Miami got a bye week before and after your rivalry game. I don't expect anything less from the ACC. But look, man, there are no excuses, right? Stanford scheduled you as their homecoming. That is disrespectful. Everybody knows that. That should be all the bulletin board material that you need, besides just the respect for yourself to want to win some games. That team looked at their schedule and chose you as homecoming. That should piss you off in its own right. So Florida State needs to go out there and just daggone win this game. But it is going to be on ESPN. The spread is at 17.5, depending on where you've looked. I've seen it as high as 18.5. It started at 16.5, so it has edged up a little bit there. Your over-under is 53.5. That breaks down to a score of around 35-17. And here's the thing. Florida State is 3-3 against the spread. Stanford is 1-5 against the spread. So this is just like, I don't know, man. This is just whoever can not screw up the most is going to end up covering in this game. And I think Florida State does need to cover because, like I said before, if you win this game by 3 points or even one touchdown and you don't cover against Stanford, or at least maybe you don't cover, but you win by 17 would be okay. Anything less than like 7 points, even really 10, is gonna feel like just an ugly win, right? But we'll take it. I mean, but it's gonna feel ugly. They are 2-0 at home. Here's the thing about their record. 4 of their 6 games have been on the road. You know, Florida State, this is only our second road game of the season. I don't think Mizzou has even played any road games this season. They've played 4 out of their first 6 games on the road, so I'm sure they're happy to be home. 2 of 4 losses were against currently ranked teams, but they've also been blown out 3 times in 6 games. They lost 23-20 to Hawaii at Hawaii in the game in their first game. Hawaii is 5-2, still it's Hawaii. They got the brakes beat off of them by BYU 27-3. BYU is 6-0. Then they beat BC at home 30-20, but Boston College again is dumpster juice. They are 1-5. Why could we not have got Boston College on the schedule this year? That would have been great. I don't know. They have a really good passing defense, passing offense, so we probably would have made them look like a Heisman hopeful quarterback anyway. Then they come back and they lose at Virginia 48-20. As we know, Virginia is a pretty darn good team, overachieving this year. Then they go home and they beat San Jose State, who is only 2-4 on the season, by 1 point, 30-29. Then they get blown out last week by SMU, 4-2 on the season, not really having the year they probably hoped for to repeat for an ACC championship, but they're not a bad team. They lose that game 34-10. So, again, man, they have really not even been competitive against any Power 4 teams. So this is why I say Florida State should just straight out smack the Stanford team. I don't know that I expect that to happen, but that's how it should play out, right? And so let's talk about the offense first. This is a weird offense, man. It's not weird, but just kind of old school, right? They actually line up under center quite a bit. They do run some pistol formation, some traditional shotgun. They do like to use their tight ends a lot. You will see a lot of 2 tight end looks, the quarterback is funny. He's kind of like that old, he's more of that traditional pocket passer, right? He is a big guy with a pretty decent arm, but he's slow. I mean, he is slow as all get out when you watch him try and scramble. So this isn't like trying to contain Chandler Morris. This isn't trying, I mean, Carson Beck didn't have to run a whole lot, but he's more mobile than this guy. This isn't a Ty Simpson type of guy. So you should have some opportunities in this game. The receivers are just okay. The O-line is not very good at all. The running back is pretty good. We're going to talk about that, but he's behind a bad offensive line. When you look at some numbers here, they are averaging 18.8 points per game, 15.8 versus Power 4 teams. So that's, again, they're averaging 16 points a game. If you go out here and you give up 30 points to this team, you should fire Tony White, regardless of whether you fire Mike Norvell or not. Just, I'm done with that. You should not give up more than 20 tops in this game. They have only faced one scoring defense in the top 50, which was BYU, and it held them to 3 points. So again, if you're worth your salt on defense, you should be able to hold this team down. Passing offense, this is where I do get a little bit of nervousness about this game. I don't love the matchups, some of the matchups in this game, because Stanford does like to throw the ball, and man, we can't cover anything. Like, it's struggle. We can't cover the ground with clouds right now. That's the hard part. So 241 yards per game, 61st in the country passing offense, but there is a little more nuance to this passing offense, right? They throw the ball a lot. They're just not very good at it. 46 in attempts per game at 33 per game, but they are 111th in completion percentage at 58.9%. They're 110th in passing touchdowns with only 6, and a lot of that is because they're always trailing, so they have to throw the ball a lot. They've only faced 2 passing defenses in the top 50. They've also faced the 132nd and 135th out of 136 FBS teams in passing defense, so it's not like they faced a murderer's row either. Even if our pass defense is not great, you should be able to somewhat keep them in check. The good thing is we saw against Miami where Florida State tried to take away the run and it cost them in the pass game. Well, you shouldn't have to work too hard to take away the run in this game. They're only averaging 93 yards per game, 128th in the country, 132nd in yards per carry with 2.84. That is terrible. That's like us last year, right? You should be able to shut down this rushing offense. Now, they have faced four top 50 rush defenses, but, I mean, again, our rush defense has not been the problem. It's been our secondary. They're 114th in third down conversions at 33.7%. They're not bad in the red zone, scored on 17 to 21 trips, 9 touchdowns, 8 field goals. So you can hold them to field goals pretty regularly here. Explosive plays, they're 86 in the country. That's over 20 yards with only 23, and 21 of those came in the pass game. So that, to me, is what makes me the most nervous in this game, is if they move the ball in chunk plays, it's through the air. So let's talk about the quarterback to start with, Ben Golbranson. First off, if you lose to a daggone quarterback named Ben Golbranson, and I know you lost to Mason Heinz Pretzel Bun or whatever it was last week, no disrespect to the kid because he came in there and tore us up. Man, that's just a bad, that's just awful, man. But he is a senior, Oregon State transfer, 59.2% on the year completion percentage, 7.4 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns only to 4 interceptions. Not been a great year for him. And really what's crazy is something has snapped. Something has clicked with this team, though, which is, again, what kind of worries me in this game, because the first two games of the season against Hawaii and BYU were awful, downright awful. He had 249 total yards, 4 yards per attempt, no touchdowns, and 3 picks. But the last three games, it's like a light switch flipped. I don't know what happened in these games. Maybe they changed some of their play calling. Maybe they found some personnel or something. But versus Virginia, San Jose State, and SMU, he has thrown for 1,008 yards in the last three games. Now, 444 of that did come against San Jose State, but he threw for over 2-something against both UVA and SMU. And those defenses aren't great, but neither is yours. 9.1 yards per attempt, so over double yards per attempt, 5 touchdowns to 1 pick. So they found something in the last couple of weeks. Now, the good thing about this opportunity that you have, when I talked about their offensive line is not good, and I talked about him not being a mobile guy, look, their offensive line right now is 132nd of 136 teams in pass block efficiency. They're 124th in sacks allowed, with 20 so far this season. He's been sacked 16 times in the past three games. Virginia got him 5 times. Even San Jose State got him 4 times. And SMU sacked him 7 times last week. So Florida State, if you have any chance to pin your ears back and go get this guy, this is your opportunity. I think you should terrorize him in the backfield. And you need to, because frankly, if there's one area he excels, it's at the deep ball. So you can't let him sit back there and have time to throw. I mean, this is what's crazy, right? Their passing offense has not been stellar, and he's actually struggled more in short passes. But real quick on the deep ball, which is passes of over 20 yards, this is crazy. So right now, Golbranson is number 1 in the FBS in big-time throw percentage, which is dropping it in a bucket 20 yards downfield. He is number 2 in PFF pass grade on deep throws. He is number 11 in adjusted completion percentage on deep throws. He is 5 of 5 for 207 yards and 2 touchdowns on deep throws in the middle of the field. So he's going to test your safeties, man. He is going to throw it deep. And so you better be ready for that challenge. I'm sure he's been watching the footage of this secondary, and he's probably hoping to have himself a good game for homecoming too. The good thing is they don't really throw it downfield a lot. Only 9.2% of the time. 51.5% come on short throws between 0 and 9 yards, which is actually his worst range. He's thrown 3 picks on short throws, 5 turnover-worthy plays. His PFF grade on deep throws is 97. His PFF grade on short throws is 56. And even behind the line of scrimmage throws, 55.7. So he struggles with the short throws, but he's pretty good at those deep ones, so you need to get to him quick. 54% of their passes are in the middle of the field, so again, that makes you nervous because you're talking about linebackers and safeties here, having to cover some guys. Now, he, as I said, when he's not mobile, 11 attempts this year, only 1.7 yards per attempt, 19 yards total on the ground. He's fumbled 6 times this year. He's fumbled 4 in 4 of 6 games and had 3 versus BYU. So I'd love to see some strip sacks. I'd love to see, you know, an interception. So you need to create some turnovers in this game. When we talk about their receiving core, the ones you need to know about are number 3, CJ Williams, who lines up out wide most of the time. leads the team in receptions and yardage with 35 and 404, one touchdown on the season, 11.5 yards per catch, only 62 yards in the first three games, but he's had a 100-yard receiving game in each of the past three games. So maybe that's what happened with the passing game. Maybe he just came on and got hot all of a sudden. Number 11, Bryce Farrell, also lines up out wide. 20 receptions on the season for 389 yards, 19.5 yards per catch. So a little bit more of a downfield threat there. Only one touchdown, but he did put up 135 yards against Virginia. So he's very capable. Again, they like to use their tight ends as well. Sam Roush, number 86, is a name to know. He is 6'5" and leads in touchdowns with two. Now, when we talk about their running game to round out the offense here, Michael Ford is a good back. I believe he's a true sophomore, 6'2", 220, 91 attempts, 400 yards on the season, 4.4 yards per attempt, three touchdowns, no fumbles. So, again, he's good with the ball. But here's the crazy thing about Ford. This is why I say he's a good running back behind a bad offensive line. He has 400 yards this season. 381 of those yards came after contact. So my man is carrying the entire load of the rush game on his shoulders, because that's insane. I mean, that is insane when 90% of your yards have come after contact. So again, guys, at the end of the day, man, this is not a great offense, and Florida State should be able to go in here and shut them down, but it's going to be heavily reliant on you stopping the pass, which is something we have very much struggled with. But if you can take away the run game with not so many resources devoted, and you can clean some things up in the secondary, you can have a good day against this offense, right? I mean, that Michael Ford reminds me a lot of Jamari Taylor from Virginia. So you're going to have to strap up and tackle him and make sure you get him on the ground. But this is not a special offense. You should be able to hold them under 20 points. But that's going to be the key, is can you do that? Now let's flip over to the defense, because I think this defense, it doesn't really get a whole lot better. And this is where Florida State's opportunity lies. Now, they do mix fronts. You will see 3- and 4-man fronts. You will see them bring guys up on the line of scrimmage. It's not the most effective defensive line. Not much speed at the second and third level. When you watch the tape, that's really the big thing that stands out. Their number 35 linebacker is pretty good. He's actually top 10 in tackles in the ACC. So, I mean, he's got the neck roll and all that stuff, man. He's a legit dude for Stanford, right? Let's just put that in context. But he's pretty good, man. But they got some cracker backers, right? We joke about that all the time. Like, hey, man, I'm not saying anything out of the way, right? But there's a lot of Caucasian brothers on this team. And so Florida State, man, there's just not a lot of speed on that back end. And I think Florida State should be able to take advantage of that. Number 32, their safety against Virginia. That guy was burnt toast on the regular. So, again, you got the speed to get behind these guys. Let's hope Deuce is playing. Let's hope Squirrel's back and ready to go and actually shows up for a game. That would be nice. But you have some opportunities against this secondary. Colin Wright at corner might be their best player on the entire team. He did also get burned a few times by UVA, but he's probably going to be the guy they want to put on Deuce or Squirrel or something like that, because he is their best player probably on both sides of the ball. They are giving up 30.2 points per game, 115th in the country, 32.3 against Power 4 offenses. So again, you know, Florida State, as we just mentioned earlier in the show, is averaging 30.5 points per game against Power 4 teams, and they're giving up 32.3, one of the worst defenses you faced. So you should expect to be able to put up somewhere in the 30-plus range. That is what I'm expecting out of Florida State. Their pass defense, not good. Now, this is, again, when we go back to the offense, where I don't love some of the matchups in this game. Your strength, as we know in Gus Malzahn on offense, is running the ball on the ground. Not so much the pass. But Stanford's weakness is their pass defense. 134th in the country, giving up 304 yards per game. They've allowed 13 passing touchdowns to only one single interception. The secondary has not been good, man. 122nd in completion percentage allowed, 122nd in passing touchdowns allowed. But they have faced five passing offenses ranked in the top 35. So they have been tested thoroughly. They just did not pass. Now, can your passing offense be good enough to equal what those other teams have done? You're still going to want to run the ball. And their rushing offense is only giving up 115 yards per game, and it is 37th in the country. So the rushing defense has not been bad. But I do think there is some more context with that, right? They are 22nd in rushing touchdowns allowed. So, you know, it's been a good rushing defense. But they also haven't had to face a lot of rushing challenges, because we talk about where you have a lot of these pass-heavy teams like an SMU, like a Virginia, these teams that really like to throw the ball. Well, I think a lot of it is just teams know they don't have to run the ball against Stanford. They can just air it out against that secondary. And that's not what we like to do. Now, can you do it? Sure. But it's not what you like to do. You don't want to put the game on Tommy's arm. Remember what we said before the Pitt game? I think it was something like he was 1-6, maybe 1-7 now when he throws for over 240 yards. That's not a great stat. But when you go back to this Pitt rushing defense, you're talking about 7th fewest rush attempts against them, 5th fewest attempts per game in FBS. So people aren't running the ball against them. And I don't think it's because they're scared of that rush defense. I just think they don't have to. So can Florida State do that? Because they are 76 in yards per carry allowed at 4.1, and they've only faced 2 top 50 rushing defenses. So I think you should be able to run the ball. It's just you're going to have to kind of do what other teams have not really had to do yet. You're going to attack them in a different way. They're 105th in turnovers created, dead last in interceptions, as we mentioned, with only one. They got 12 sacks on the year, which is 71st. 37% conversion allowed on third down, 64th in the country. Red zone defense, they've allowed scores on 25 of 30 trips, 12 touchdowns, 13 field goals. So they've been pretty good at holding teams to field goals down in the red zone. Explosive plays over 20 yards, they have given up 32, which is 116th on the season, so not very good there. 28 of them have come through the pass, 132nd. So again, this secondary is not good, right? It's just not. And does Florida State need to throw the ball in this game? Can they do it effectively? We know Tommy's been banged up with his ankle. You know, he's not the most mobile guy when he's injured. So maybe this is a game where he needs to throw the ball. I know some people were talking about, do you start Sperry in this game? And I think right now you need to win games more than anything else. But, you know, if you have Deuce back and you have Squirrel back, and everybody's healthy and ready to go, I think you do have the opportunity to throw in this game, but you're still going to need to establish the run because, again, go back to that stat, over 240 yards for Tommy Castellanos, he's like 1-6 and 1-7. His teams are. So, man, you've got to be able to run the ball in this game. But if you need to throw it, daggone, you ought to be able to. So let's wrap this up with some final thoughts. I only have one key to victory today, and that's a very simple one. So, really, man, when it breaks down at the end of this, the one thing, I will say this, I don't have a great feeling about this game just because two main reasons. One, Mike Norvell, as we've talked about, has really struggled to stop the bleeding at Florida State when things start to go south. I think it was Corey Clark the other day that put out the stat where it said there have been like 10 three-game losing streaks in like the last 50 years at Florida State, and Mike Norvell has had 6 of those. So, like, that's not good. He struggles to pull this team out of a nosedive when things start to go south. But there's no better chance to do it than against a team like Stanford. The other thing that makes me worry is that time difference is real. And I'm not trying to make that as an excuse, but that's a 10:30 body clock. Like, the ACC kind of screwed you on this one. You should have had the bye week before you went out there, not afterwards. That would have helped you be able to go out there early and do all that type of stuff. But it is what it is. This is what the bed that has been made. I have seen some teams struggle with this, right? You saw Penn State lose to UCLA. You saw USC go the other way to Illinois and lose in that game right after Illinois got blown out by Indiana. So teams have struggled with making that long coast-to-coast trip. We saw Cal almost upset Miami last year, should have if it wasn't for the targeting call. You know, Cal lost to us last year coming all the way across the country. So these trips have not been kind to the team that has to make the 2,500-mile trip or the long trip, one or the other. So that does, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but it is a real thing, and it does worry me. But my key to victory for this one, I can't sit here and tell you to play a clean game. I've said it for 3 weeks. You haven't done it. I can't say play complimentary football. I've said it for 3 weeks. You haven't done it. My only key is this. Florida State, if you're watching me, listen to me. You are the better team. Whether you want to believe it or not, I think you have a better coaching staff. BTA. And if there's kids in the room, the family-friendly version of that is belt to butt. Go win the freaking game that you should win. You're a 17.5-point favorite. Go win the game. Stop shooting yourself in the foot. Stop looking like you don't know what you're doing. And go win the game. And so with that, I'm going to give you my score prediction. I'm going to drop Michael's score prediction too because I got it on yesterday's episode that we can't use. So I'm going to go ahead and drop his as well. Look, Michael does not feel good about this game either, right? He actually has Stanford pulling the upset 28-24, which again, I think would be a firing situation. I just think Florida State finds a way in this game. And I said yesterday that I don't necessarily feel this way because I think Florida State is like the great team. I think it's because Stanford is so bad. I think they're less bad, or they're more bad than you are right now. Now, you have to make that trip and all that stuff, the time difference there at home. So I get all that. You had better not lose this game, or else, again, I think somebody or somebody's, plural, should get fired after this. So I got Florida State winning 35-17. That's a cover by a half a point. I'll take it. Again, anything less than 10, I think you're still going to kind of feel dirty inside after winning this game, but you'll take the win. I just want something positive right now. So I got the Noles winning this one. I hope I'm right. I hope Michael's wrong. But if Michael's wrong, we're probably going to be talking about a coaching hot board next week on the bye week. We'll see what happens. But that's going to do it for this one, guys. If you enjoyed this episode, drop a like and subscribe to stay connected with us. Look, I've seen on social media some people saying I'm done listening to podcasts for the year because the team stinks and all that stuff. Hey, man, it ain't our fault they suck, right? We're not going anywhere. That don't mean you got to quit on us, right? So stay with us. Stay rocking with us. We're going to do the best we can for you guys every week to bring you content, something to talk about, something to listen to. It might even be more enjoyable than watching the actual game itself. So stick with us. Rock with us. Drop a like and subscribe. If you want to become a member of the PTS tribe, definitely check that out. It's only $5 a month. We get a cut after YouTube takes theirs. Everything goes back into the show to help make this better. You know, we do free tailgates and we do all that stuff for you guys when we go to games. We would appreciate that. I want to thank all of the new members that have joined. We've had 3 or 4 new members step up in the last couple of weeks and join the channel. Man, we cannot thank you enough. It really means a lot to us here. Again, I know these are trying times, but man, we really can't thank you enough. And so we appreciate that. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noles fans as well. We also have the website at plantandspear.com where you can find all of our stuff. And we'll be back with you guys for our next one. Michael will be back for the post-game show. Again, we just had some audio issues that we couldn't use the episode, so we're redoing it today. But again, guys, thanks for joining us. We'll see you on Sunday, and we'll either have a win to talk about or probably a coaching hot board. So until then, it is always, no matter what, go Noles.